You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yesterday, New Zealand cracked 10,000 recorded cases of COVID-19, sparking concerns that we are well already into our second wave of Omicron. I spoke to David Welch, senior lecturer from the Centre for Computational Evolution at the University of Auckland, and started by asking what the difference is between the dominant BA2 strain and the newer BA5 strain.
So the main thing is that the BA5 variant seems to have a growth advantage. We think that that growth advantage comes from its immune evasion capability, but I think there's also a sort of straight-up transmissibility advantage in there. And essentially that means, you know, it can infect more people and it can reinfect people who have immunity to other strains. And that's why we're seeing it growing around the world. BA5, I think, is now the dominant variant globally, and it's either dominant here in New Zealand or will be within the next few days, I would say.
So we know that it has an increased transmissibility, and as you said, it also is evading immune responses. So how does it get to this point? Is it due to people being behind on their vaccinations, or people had COVID too long ago for it to still elicit an immune response? What is the reason for this?
Yeah, so I guess we've seen over the past 2.5 years or whatever it is now, we've seen this virus evolve in all sorts of different ways. This is just the latest variant that has evolved to to make sure it can spread itself. And so, yeah, it will, you know, vaccines and previous infection still give you some protection against getting infected from this thing, but not much. And you know, the longer ago the last time you got infected or last time you got a vaccine shot was, the less immunity you have. Our immunity that we get seems to wane fairly rapidly, and that's why we see, you know, in different countries around the world that have been dealing with these kind of outbreaks for longer than us, they've seen kind of wave after wave after wave.
It's getting quite hard to keep up with all the variants we've got, because this week we saw BA2.75 reported in New Zealand.
Yeah.
How many different variants do we have in the country at the moment, and do we know at this point if there's any difference in transmissibility or ability to evade an immune response?
Yeah, so so as you said before, BA2 is a dominant variant. That's been the main one in the country for most of this wave, most of the last wave. We saw three new variants arise, which are all kind of similar, BA4, BA5, and BA2.12.1, and they all shared a similar sort of profile, an immune escape profile. But BA5 out of those three was the one that had the slight advantage and has risen to dominance. And then there's this BA2.75, which has just come to people's attention the last week or two, really. That's been found over in India, where it's you know, seems to have rapidly risen. Starting to cause uptick in cases in some states. And the thing is, over there, there's not particularly good genomic surveillance, so that's partly why we're catching up with this late. But that variant seems to have spread to a few other countries around the world. I think there's more than 10 countries that have detected cases, including a few border-related cases in New Zealand. So just any variant that, you know, rapidly grows and spreads around the world is a cause for concern. There's not any, you know, we're not quite sure how transmissible it is comparable to BA5, but it's certainly one to watch, and we're looking into it as much as we can at the moment.
So during the first wave earlier this year, it seems like every person under 30 that I knew got COVID within a month. What are the trends regarding what demographics are getting infected in this wave?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The first wave, particularly the early part of the first wave was really dominated by young age groups, and we know that, you know, the models sort of know about that, right? There's high contact, you know, people in their 20s and 30s have high contact, you know, they go out and they contact all sorts of different people, and so you expect to see spreading there. But as the wave progressed, we have seen a slow increase in cases in the older age groups, and also, you know, because those people in the older age groups weren't, a lot of them weren't infected in the first wave, it means their immunity is maybe not quite as robust as in some of the younger age groups now. So we're seeing an increase in cases in the older groups, particularly, you know, the oldest age groups, you know, the 70-plus. And that's a real concern because, you know, as we know, there's a huge dependence on age in terms of your likelihood of getting sick or very sick or even dying. And so, you know, even if the peak of this wave is not as high as the peak of the last wave in terms of cases, because there seems to be that spread in the older age groups, it's maybe that we end up with higher hospitalisation numbers.
So winter is already a breeding ground for other illnesses. So what is the second wave going to look like for our hospitals? How comparable could it be to our first wave earlier this year?
Yeah, I mean, so basically the hospitals are operating at a much higher, off a much higher base at the moment in terms of, you know, patients there for all sorts of things. There's a lot of respiratory illness, and that tends to fill up the hospitals anyway at this time of year. So adding on a real peak of COVID cases is quite concerning, actually. I'm not sure how they're going to cope. I don't model myself, hospital capacity and that sort of thing. But I do know that we are expecting a lot more people to be presenting at a hospital as case numbers grow, and you know, that may be reason for the government to take further measures to protect the healthcare system. But I would say that it's not necessary that we wait for the government to take, you know, measures to prevent spread. You know, people should be getting updates to their vaccines. People should be wearing high quality masks where they can. People should be, you know, taking having a second thought before they go into a sort of crowded, poorly ventilated environment.
So on that note, should going back to red traffic light be something that should be reconsidered? Would it have an effect on case numbers?
We certainly saw in the last wave when we went from red down to orange that there was more contact going on, and so therefore more chance for transmission. So the assumption is that if red were reimposed, then there'd be, you know, people would pull back. But the main thing that red does is there's a bit of a broader mask mandate. Masking was mandated in schools last time. I think that is a very good idea. I don't know, any school is basically free to impose that mandate at the moment. And I would strongly suggest that schools take that initiative themselves. Same with large businesses and stuff. You know, there were a lot of signs coming down from businesses where, you know, it said, please wear a mask. I would put those signs back up, right? It should just kind of be normalised. That sort of behaviour of you know, mask wearing and taking care not to spread the disease to those around you, I'm sure it's something the government is watching very closely in terms of case numbers and hospitalisation numbers to decide whether whether the move to red is necessary. And you know, I hope they're not taking that off the table.
That was David Welsh, Senior Lecturer from the Centre for Computational Evolution at the University of Auckland.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.